Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om. This verse is written in prose, and it's just been divided on the board to be chanted. So, do we have any expert mantra chanters who would like to chant? Because I can't exactly see how it's divided, and if it's even divided properly. Who's good at chanting Sanskrit? You want to chant? Purusha Saganya Maisha Maisha Ganjavayastha Suravi Chakala. Anyone want to try it? Amiso Ganjavayastha. Any ladies want to chant? Word meanings. Tasya, his. Ha, indeed. Dyaha, which. Purisha, of the stool. Surabhi, by the aroma. Sugandhya, possessing a good fragrance. Bhayu, the air. Tam, that. Desham, country. Dasha, up to 10. Yojanam, yojanas. One yojana equals 8 miles. Let's try that again. One yojana equals 8 miles. Samantat, all around. Surabhin, aromatic. Chakara, made. Translation. Because Lord Rishabhdev remained in that condition. Let's read the verse before so we know what that condition is. This is the previous verse, verse 32. When Lord Rishabhdev saw that the general populace was very antagonistic to his execution of mystic yoga, he accepted the behavior of a python in order to counteract their opposition. Thus he stayed in one place and lay down. While lying down, he ate and drank. and he passed stool and urine and rolled in it. Indeed, he smeared his whole body with his own stool and urine, so that opposing elements might not come and disturb him. So today's verse. Because Lord Rishabhdev remained in that condition, the public did not disturb him. But no bad aroma emanated from his stool and urine. Quite the contrary. His stool and urine were so aromatic that they filled 80 miles of the countryside with a pleasant fragrance. Purport. From this, we can certainly assume that Lord Rishabhadev was transcendentally blissful. His stool and urine were so completely different from material stool and urine that they were aromatic. Even in the material world, cow dung is accepted as purified and antiseptic. A person can keep stacks of cow dung in one place and it will not create a bad odor or to disturb anyone. We can take it for granted that in the spiritual world, stool and urine are also pleasantly scented. Indeed, the entire atmosphere became very pleasant due to Lord Rishabhadev's stool and urine. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Once on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, one of his disciples asked a question about the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everything is eternal. So nothing can die, nothing can be destroyed. So the disciple was trying to figure out, if nothing is destroyed, how can the devotees eat? Because they would have to destroy vegetables. They'd have to get the vegetables, cook them, and eat them. So does anybody know Prabhupada's answer? Prabhupada said, you'll have to go there to find out. And in that answer, we understand that the disciple is trying to imagine what the spiritual dimension is like based on his experience of this world. And by Prabhupada saying you have to go there, that was another way of saying you cannot understand. It is inconceivable. And it's interesting, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, you could say he makes a statement, but you could say he makes a vow, in a sense, or again, I would say the best word is a guarantee, that if you understand my transcendental nature, tattva, tattvataha, janma, karma, chame, divyam, evam, jyobeti, tattvata. If you understand me as I am, then what happens? What's the boon that you get? You don't have to take birth again. Sounds pretty easy, right? All I have to do is understand Krishna and I don't have to take another birth. Sounds easy. It's not easy. It's not easy because we tend to see Krishna in a wrong way. Just like we see Radha and Krishna together. So So when the conditioned soul sees a man and woman together, what does the conditioned soul think? Thinks of lust. So if we come to the point where we see Radha and Krishna together and we understand this has nothing to do with lust, it's completely pure, that is tattvataha. That means we've understood Krishna in tattvata. Right? But how can you get to that position to understand Krishna perfectly? That's not easy. Krishna comes, he performs his lila, and then sometimes one may think, why did Krishna come and steal the clothes of the gopis? And now everyone thinks that Krishna's just some lusty boy. He shouldn't have done it. It's confusing people. In fact, in one of our temples in America, we have a painting of that pastime. And the painting is about 5 meters wide. And two and a half meters high, a huge painting in the temple of this pastime. But the reality is, when you can come to understand that that activity has nothing to do with the lust of this world, then you're liberated. Then you can go back and engage in those pastimes. Because you can only understand that, we can only understand that when we are free of lust. We can't understand it otherwise. So Krishna comes to do those pastimes to purify us. But Prabhupada said, if you don't accept those pastimes in the right consciousness, instead of becoming purified, you'll become putrefied. You'll become destroyed by the very pastime that could purify you. Why? Because if we're not in the proper consciousness, we'll want to imitate that pastime. Not that we'll want to. Prabhupada said in the Bhagavatam, every man wants to have many women. So it's not even that we want to. That's the nature. We have that desire. So Krishna comes and does the very thing that we want to do. Every man would like to enjoy with many women. In fact, you can start a whole religion with that idea. And you can inspire people to attach bombs to themselves and blow people up, because then they can go and get all the women. Because that's what we want. In America, maybe in India also, they have television shows. And they might show somebody riding a bicycle and flying in the air and spinning around, or riding down a stairway on a bicycle, or doing something dangerous, and then there'll be a little sign below the screen that says, don't try this at home. You have that in India? You know, somebody's doing something, you know, it's a little dangerous, and they'll say, don't try this at home. So, that picture in the temple in America of Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis, I suggested, you should give that a title. And the title is, don't try this at home. And so that's the problem. Krishna is, he comes and he does exactly what we want to do. Isn't it? That Prabhupada said right in the Bhagavatam. He said, every man wants to enjoy with many women. Not only that, he said, we come into the material world to enjoy beautiful women. He said, we come to the material world being attracted by beautiful women. Right there in the Bhagavatam. So the very thing that we came here to do, the very thing we want to do, the very thing that keeps us here, Krishna does it. Why? To show us that I can do it, but you can't. And if I do it, and you get absorbed in the way I do it, and you understand the consciousness with which I do it, and understand the relationship I have with the people I do it with, you become liberated from all of your desire to do it. And that's why he does it. Right? And that's why materialistic people can't understand why he would do that. He's just a lusty boy. You may remember that conversation where one man was complaining to Prabhupada, why Krishna has so many wives? And he was saying he's immoral. And Prabhupada said, no. And Krishna is complaining. Sri Sri Radha Rasa Bihari Ki Jai. Sri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. This man is complaining. Krishna is stealing other people's wives. He's God. At least he's supposed to be. But how can God steal other men's wives? Setting such a bad example. What did Prabhupada say? He said, no, you're the thief. Every woman is Krishna's wife. You've stolen your wife from Krishna. That's the understanding. All the gopis, we understand the tattva. What is the tattva? The tattva is all the gopis are expansions of Radharani. What is the tattva? The tattva is Radharani's expansion of him, of Krishna. He expands himself, so he's only enjoying with himself in his own expansion. What's wrong with that? If you could expand and enjoy with yourself, you would do it also. Is there anything wrong? And if you expand to enjoy with yourself, you're going to expand in forms that are enjoyable for you. And the gopis have the greatest love. And Krishna is Rasaraj. And all he wants is love. So he expands into forms that can love him. What does Bhagavatam say? There's no devotion like the love of the gopis. So the gopis are only expansions of himself. That's the tattva. What did Prabhupada say in one lecture? He said, it looks like boys and girls. There's no pregnancy. There's no lust. There's nothing. And so when we enter into that understanding, all the lust within our heart is removed. But until the lust within our heart is subdued sufficiently, we can't understand it. And that's why Krishna says, when you understand it, then you're liberated. You have to be liberated to understand it. And if we don't understand it, then we become putrefied. So the same thing we have here, Rishabdev. Or last week in Chopati, we spoke on Baraha, a boar. Boars are not beautiful. Big, fat, ugly pigs. And the boar was beautiful, a beautiful pig. Can you imagine? A beautiful boar. Have you ever heard the sound of a boar? What kind of sound do they make? Isn't it? They grunt. In the Bhagavatam, it said, the demigods were trying to understand, who is this boar that has come from the nose of Brahma? And so the boar wanted to indicate that he was an incarnation of Krishna, so he made his boar sound, but it wasn't it was this beautiful sound, mesmerizing sound, transcendental sound. And when he made that sound, it was so intoxicating that everybody knew, oh, this is Krishna. No one can make a sound like that. That's so beautiful. In this world, you know, you have your beautiful singers, or your you know, people with beautiful voices. They speak nicely, sweetly. Can you imagine Krishna's voice? Krishna singing? What that must be like? So the same thing here. We have Rishabhdev, who looks like... What does he look like? Looks like a madman. So here Bhagavatam is showing, yes, he looks like a madman, but does a madman have stool and urine? That's fragrant. Whose fragrance carries for 80 miles? Can you imagine how fragrant that is? Inconceivable. And only the devotee can understand this and appreciate it. And that is Krishna's mercy on the devotee. How does Krishna manifest his mercy? He manifests his mercy by allowing us to appreciate his transcendental beauty. Because one of the greatest benedictions that the devotee wants is to get some taste. Even Takahaidas prayed to Lord Chaitanya. Takahaidas is Namacharya. He prayed, please give me taste for the holy name. Amazing, isn't it? Well, that's considered by the devotee one of the greatest gifts of mercy that Krishna can give. Then I can have some taste, I can have some understanding of who you are, what your lila is. I could enter into that just a little bit. For the devotee, that's everything. Just a little drop of nectar of understanding. That's all the devotee wants. So Krishna, He hides himself. Naham prakasha sarvasya. He hides himself from everybody. And it's only the devotee who can uncover who Krishna is. Maya javanika achanam. You're hiding behind the curtain of Maya. And so a devotee can penetrate it, that curtain. And that is how Krishna reciprocates. Krishna says, this is who I am. And Krishna gives you a little taste. Have you ever gotten a little taste? Yes. Where did it come from? And how can we get that taste? Can we force Krishna? Give me a taste? Nice story. Early in the movement, 1969 perhaps, one devotee was feeling that maybe this song, Jagannatha Shami Nayana Patagami Bhava to me, is perhaps the wrong mood, because the devotee is saying, my dear Lord Jagannath, please be visible to me. Please show yourself. So in that sense, show your qualities. I want to understand who you are. Show yourself to me. Be visible to my eyes. Let me see you. Let me experience you. Let me understand you. So the devotee wrote Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, isn't this the wrong mood? Because I'm asking Krishna to do something for me. And Prabhupada wrote back, he said, if Krishna doesn't reveal himself to you, how can you go on in devotional service? Because it's based on a relationship. We were saying in class the other day, in the japa workshop, Prabhupada was on a morning walk, he was playing the devil's advocate. So he said, how do you know Krishna is God? One devotee said, Prabhupada, because you say, I could be cheating you. Why you believe me? He said, Prabhupada, because it says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, that's just a book. Why do you believe that book? You know, on and on. And they're making one argument. The acharyas say, who are these acharyas? What do we care for them? You know, on and on and on. How do you know Krishna is God? So finally, one devotee says, Prabhupada, because you can feel Krishna. That's how you know he's God. Prabhupada said, yeah, yes. That's the answer. How do you know Krishna is God if you have no experience? How will you go on your entire life dedicating yourself with no experience? Satchinandan Swami. Satchinandan Swami is famous for doing japa retreats, many of which I attended and also helped and worked with him. And one thing he would always say is, my dear devotees, how long can you go on in Krishna consciousness without a taste? Simply, mechanically chanting and no taste. He said, you cannot. You must enter the kingdom of taste, because that is where your impetus comes. So Prabhupada is saying the same thing. Unless Krishna reveals himself, how will you go on? The impetus to go on is that little reciprocation, the little taste, the little realization. I had an insight today. I understood something about Krishna's lila with the gopis. Ah, now I'm inspired. I'm encouraged. I can enthuse to continue in Krishna consciousness. I got some taste this morning from chanting the holy name. Or I got some realization during the Guru Puja. During the kirtan, Krishna was giving me a little mercy. I could feel it. I'm inspired. We live for this. This is our life and soul. I remember the first time I went on parikrama, Navadvipdham parikrama. Everybody had the same realization. This was like the parikrama in Mayapur, where all the GBC, all the sannyasis, everybody went. It was the who's who in ISKCON. They were all there. And we'd go to the holy places and they'd say, in this place, Lord Chaitanya did this and did that and this and that. And you want to experience. And sometimes you go and you don't feel anything. You just, oh, this is where he did this and this is where they all danced ecstatically. And you're thinking, oh, it's so hot. And I'm so hungry. And when's this going to be over? And you're just lamenting that here I am in this holy place and I don't feel anything. You ever have that experience? Maybe you see the deity and or you chant the holy name and nothing happens. Nothing much happens. And you're lamenting. So this is natural for a devotee. They want to be able to enter more deeply into the lila, into the name, into the understanding of shastra. And when Krishna is kind to the devotee, what does he do? He reveals something. And every time Krishna reveals something to us, it's like a precious gem, and we should hold on to it and say, thank you, Krishna. Shouldn't we? Because every realization is precious. And every realization brings us one step closer to Krishna. But the realizations are earned. They're not cheap. You have to pay something for them. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked, Srila Prabhupada, what is the greatest obstacle to bhakti? Very good question, don't you think? The greatest, the number one, what is it? You're thinking, it's envy. You're thinking, it's sex desire. You're thinking, it's pride. Prabhupada didn't say any of those. He said, the one greatest obstacle to bhakti, it's simple. You, yourself, are the greatest obstacle. So the only person who is preventing us from getting these deeper realizations is ourselves. Krishna is willing to give it. But we have to pay something for it, because he won't give it cheaply. Because if he gives it cheaply, then what happens? You think, oh, that was easy, I didn't do anything and I got so much mercy and realization, so why even bother trying? But sometimes Krishna makes it really difficult. You really try, and you try, and you try over and over and over, and you become helpless. And you cry to Krishna, please, please, please. And then Krishna says, okay. And he pours a bucket of nectar over your head and showers you with mercy. Because he wants us. That's good for us. He wants to give it. But the father who's intelligent will never give too much to the son or daughter, because they won't be able to handle it. One time, a devotee asked Prabhupada, please give me your mercy, please give me your mercy. Please give me your mercy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, Krishna is very careful about how much mercy he will give his devotee. Because if he gives too much and the devotee is immature, he won't be able to handle it. Let's say Krishna showered his mercy. You became this advanced, elevated devotee overnight like that. What would happen to most of us? 3 days later, we'd be gone. We'd become so proud that I'm the most advanced devotee, we'd be finished. Right? That was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's point. He won't give the mercy until we're ready for it. If we get too much, we all want mercy. Why isn't Krishna giving me mercy? How qualified are you? You get mercy, you become advanced. Now everybody wants to touch your feet. Now what do? Everyone's throwing money at you. Now what do? That could be your death. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, no Vaishnava ever becomes guru, because no Vaishnava ever criticizes another Vaishnava. And the service of a Vaishnava, the service of a guru, is to criticize. So we are so contaminated materially, we come to ISKCON as a servant. We're very much in the mood. And if we're not careful, we get some position, and then we think, oh, now I'm the enjoyer, I have position. Because that desire is there, very deep in the heart. So Krishna is very careful what he's going to give you and how he's going to give it. Because if we're not qualified, it simply go to our head. Now I can again be the enjoyer. Nice story. One devotee told me that his spiritual master left and he took shelter of His Holiness Radhanath Swami. And he approached Radhanath Swami and said, I would like to take shelter of you. And Maharaj said, if you like, I will. I am your servant. I will perform this service. And then later on, that same devotee said, Maharaj, I would like to take initiation from you. He said, it's not really necessary, but if you really want, I will give it to you. But I want you to remember three things. Number one, first, I am your servant. This is the guru. Number one, first, I am your servant. Number two, I am your friend. And last, number three, I'm your guru. If you're in that consciousness, yes, Krishna can give you the whole world, because it won't go to your head. And that's how we become qualified to get Krishna's mercy. If now Krishna reveals something deep to us, most of us are going to become proud, thinking, I have special realization. In the Naradi Purana, it describes that one of the biggest problems for devotees when they become advanced is they become proud, thinking, now I'm advanced. Not only that, the paradox is, when they come to this level of detachment, then they become proud, thinking, just see how detached I am. And then they say, then the devotee comes to the level where he feels in his heart, I don't want any acknowledgement from anybody. And then the verse says, and some devotee comes and says, oh Prabhu, you're very great. You gave such a nice class. You do such nice kirtan. You do such nice service. And that devotee who wants no praise from anyone, when he gets it, he feels very good. Oh, they're praising me. I feel very good. So pride is so deeply rooted in the heart that Krishna must be very careful about what he gives us, how much he gives us, what we can digest. Otherwise, it would go to our head. So in this example, Bhaktisiddhanta said, you can't be, no Vaishnava can be a guru, because no Vaishnava criticizes. And then in the next sentence he said, but the disciplic succession must go on, so we have to become guru. So how do we become guru? Because we realize, I am the servant of my disciples. That's it. I am not, oh, now I become guru. After all these years, 40 years in the movement, I can become guru. I can finally become an enjoyer again. Then we're finished. Right? Finished. Spiritual life finished. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, a pure devotee, this will never happen to a pure devotee, because he's fixed in his realization of servant. There is nothing in this world that can ever deviate him, pull him away from his realization that I'm servant. That's Krishna consciousness. You can give him the whole world and he'll always think, I'm servant. So if we come to this position, then we're in the ideal situation to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's lila, because then Krishna will feel confident he can reveal it to us. And it won't go to our head. We're qualified to understand it. So we should want Krishna to reveal it, but we should become qualified. Right? So, let us end here. Does anyone... What time do we go? Till 9?
That?
Do we end now, or are we... Some question?
Continue.
What? Oh.
Continue more till 9:15.
Oh, but I have to get ready for this other...
Give the full session to them. Don't deprive them from the sessions.
Well, if you want to relate this to japa, then, and we go back to the statement where Prabhupada said, we're the greatest obstacle. So if we're chanting and we're simply mechanically chanting, we are the cause of our own problem. We are causing that on ourselves by not making the proper effort. The Krishna is always willing to give his mercy, to give the taste. But we have to become qualified. So if we're not getting it, we're creating our own... It's ourselves who are creating the problem. It's not that Krishna is depriving us of the taste. we're not making the proper effort. Everything is in Krishna's name. He can reveal everything through His name. But what kind of name are we chanting? The real name or something else? Did you know there's a real name and a not a real name? Did you know there's a difference? The Bhaktivinoda Thakur said merely the recitation of the syllables, merely the sound of Krishna is not Krishna. I was explaining on Friday night to the devotees that sometimes when we are not chanting well, the name is not revealing itself to us. And as a result, we become distracted, preoccupied in our minds or externally in other things. We become distracted. We're not present with the name. Because it's not revealing itself because we're not chanting properly. And so I asked the devotees, I said, when you're not chanting properly and you finish your rounds, how do you feel? And the devotees say, I feel depressed. I feel discouraged. I even feel guilty because I didn't apply myself. I feel like I'm going to have a bad day today. Sometimes devotees say, I feel like an anxiety. So I said, obviously, you are not with Krishna, because if you were with Krishna, you wouldn't be depressed and anxiety and discouraged. So that's not the name. That's just the sound which appears to be the name. But where there is devotion, then the real name appears, where there is the proper attitude, where there is substance, then the name appears. How do you feel when the real name appears? Encouraged, blissful, happy, right? Don't you? Nectar, taste. If the real name appears, the Krishna begins to reveal himself, some taste in that name. What happens? What happens then? I'll tell you what happens. One GBC in our movement, who is also a sannyasi and also a guru, said to some of the devotees, I cannot chant 16 rounds anymore. What did he mean? I cannot chant 16 rounds anymore. Well, they're ready to call a GBC meeting. What are we going to do? He's Guru GBC Sannyasi. He can't chant 16 rounds. He said, Prabhus, I can't stop at 16 anymore. I have to chant 32 to be satisfied. I can't chant 16. It's impossible. I can't stop at 16. I have to chant 32. Why? What happened? Because he's experiencing some mercy coming through the name. He's getting some taste. And that nectar is so sweet. What happens when prasadam is good? Prabhu, would you like another gulab jamun? Oh yeah, that last one was really good. I'll take another. Right? I made a study. I don't know if this is true in America. But this preparation, Malpura. You call it Malpura? It's a little yogurt sauce. Like we in America, we put like strawberries in yogurt. And then we put the Malpura in it. The Malpur is like a donut hole, like a. So I noticed in America at the Sunday feast, it doesn't matter how much Malpur you make, by the end of the feast, the buckets are empty completely. There's nothing left. Say, oh Prabhu, three buckets wasn't enough. Okay, we'll make four for the next feast. Four buckets is not enough. Oh, we better make five. Doesn't matter how much you make. I also noticed kofta. Doesn't matter how much you make, in America anyway. It's always gone. What about the sabji that has too much salt? Or you burnt it? You'll notice at the end of the feast, there's always a lot left. Or that sabji that somehow or other had the wrong spice. They put camphor instead of salt. Something went wrong. And buckets of it, and you go around. Would you like any more? No. Prabhu, would you like more than 16 rounds? No, thank you. My 16 rounds, they don't taste that good. Prabhu, would you like some more Malpura Japa? Oh yeah, give me more. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we want the Malpura Kofta Japa, not the burnt rice over salted Japa. And the only reason we don't get it is it's ourselves. Because we're not making the proper effort. Obviously, we all want that taste. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and this is how we, on the last day of our japa retreat, this is how we send the devotees off with this one thought. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, there's nothing but the name in all the 14 worlds. That is the realization we aspire for. That we come to the point where there's nothing in this material world that is attractive to us. The only thing attractive is the name. There's nothing but the name. What does that mean? That means you look out in this world and there's nothing that allures you. There's nothing that inspires you. What inspires you is the name. That's the perfection. Srila Prabhupada said, the symptom of an advanced devotee is how much taste he has for chanting. It's a natural symptom. There will be taste. And when there's taste for chanting, then there's greater appreciation for the Vaishnavas, more understanding of the Leela, more realization, more appreciation for the deities, more of a service attitude. It all comes. That's just how it is. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when I'm chanting the holy name, I feel as if there are drops of nectar, ambrosial, just dropping in my heart. That's what japa is supposed to be like. Just a very wonderful, relishable, pleasing activity. That's the holy name. He says, I feel like I'm drowning in oceans of nectar. That's the real name. That's the name without offense. That's Shuddhanam. That's the realization of Shuddhanam. I'm drowning in an ocean of nectar. Nectar is dropping in my heart, and there's nothing in this world but the name. When we come to the stage of Shuddhanam, that's how we feel. And the goal is Shuddhanam. The goal is not 100 rounds of aparad. The goal, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, just chant the pure name once. Because once you chant the pure name once, then you'll want to chant constantly. So our goal is to chant a pure name. That's it. So, we should stop. Are there any questions? Yes.
We have got four types of psychophysical nature: Brahman, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya. Does it have any influence on the effectiveness of japa?
Does it?
Effectiveness of japa.
Does it affect our japa? Or help, does it help it or affect it?
Somebody is by psychophysical nature Brahmanic. Somebody is Vaishya, somebody Kshatriya.
Yeah.
So those qualities will influence the effect.
He's asking, our psychophysical nature, will those qualities influence the effect of chanting or our ability to chant? Only if you allow them to. The holy name is transcendental. So if you fully absorb yourself in the holy name and give yourself to the holy name, it will affect us all equally. Now, we may say, if someone is battling more strongly with the lower modes of nature and allows themselves to remain in the lower modes of nature, yes, that will affect them. But the holy name is so powerful that it can pull us out of the modes of nature. I mean, look at all of us, Americans. We were deeply rooted in the modes of nature, and the holy name pulled us out.
The holy name is in 14 lokas. Is it also in the spiritual world?
What was the first thing? The holy name is?
Is in 14 loka. 14 loka.
14 loka. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's there in the spiritual world, but it's in the background. Here it is our main, this is the main pillar of our bhakti. Now, I would like to say, from my own experience, the worst possible thing we can do is to not chant our rounds properly. It's the worst thing we could do. Conversely, the most nourishing thing we can do for ourselves is to chant our rounds properly. It's the greatest act of self-renewal. It's the greatest act of self-love to chant the holy names properly. And it's the greatest act of self-destruction to not make every effort to chant properly. Prabhupada, he sometimes gives this example that if we don't take to spiritual life, we're committing spiritual suicide. That we're envious of ourselves, that we're the killer of the soul. So it is by the holy name that we get love of Krishna. It is by the holy name that our relationship with Krishna is awakened. And if we don't chant properly, we don't get the result. We have to chant properly to get the result. Someone else had a... Yes.
Thank you, Bhujan Hare Krishna. We sometimes we get a little drop of realization, but
sometimes we
get a little drop of realizations, which you said
get a drop of Krishna. Sometimes we get a drop of realizations,
but we often forget it in the long run. So how can we?
Sometimes we get a drop of realization because those realizations are not fully matured yet, and only when those realizations become aligned with your actions, where you fully imbibe and you live those realizations, will they become who you are. And so in the beginning, it's like we get a realization, but we may not fully embrace it in our life. So it comes as a mercy, but it comes in a more immature stage. It hasn't matured enough to become who we are. Like, you get a realization about humility, and then the next week you get in an argument with somebody. That's because the realization of humility is not matured yet. But at least you realize it's important. And at least you realize you want it. And you need it. But it has to mature more. So it's like a realization being planted in a soil. But this, you know, you have to cultivate it. So keep cultivating that realization. Write them down. And... realizations also come in proportion to your desire to advance. So sometimes we're desiring to advance in a certain way, and Krishna is giving us realizations how to advance in that way. And then sometimes we lose that desire. And with the loss of the desire, the realizations tend to become obscured. We lose connection with them because the intensity of the desire to advance in a particular way weakens. Because Krishna is giving realization according to our need, what we want to achieve. we read last week in Chaupati, in that chapter, it said Brahma saw that the earth planet had fallen into the bottom of the ocean, and he was thinking, how did that happen, and how are we going to get it out? And he thought, I have no idea how we're going to do that. And then Prabhupada said, but he wasn't confused and he wasn't discouraged, because he knew Krishna would help him. So that's the attitude of the devotee. We know, if I want Krishna, he will give me the realizations and intelligence how to do it. You know, a very interesting thing about the Japa workshop is everything we teach, in one sense, we don't have to teach, because if you just take your Japa seriously, everything we teach, you will get all those realizations. And I had this experience. It's so funny. One of my godbrothers has written a book on Japa, and he has all his realizations in this Japa book. And I was reading this book with another devotee the day after our Japa workshop, and we're reading things, and it's practically word for word what I was teaching, and I hadn't used his book as a text for what I was teaching. And I just looked at him and I said, isn't that funny? That the holy name revealed to me exactly what it revealed to him, practically verbatim. His writing was the same thing we taught in the workshop. I had another experience. 1978, Mayapur Festival. There was a big Sankirtan meeting. Devotees from Japan, Europe, America, India, South America, all over the world, they came together to meet, to share what they say on Sankirtan. And these devotees have never met, they never met themselves. It's the first time they're ever together. And everybody was sharing what they say, and everybody was saying the same thing. Same super soul. Same desire to distribute books. And I was just watching this, and I was saying, super soul is speaking here, because everyone in every country is basically saying the same thing. So when we have the desire to advance, then Krishna, as Prabhupada said in this purport, devotee's never discouraged, because he knows Krishna will always help if that desire is there. We cannot be defeated. It's impossible. The only way we can be defeated is if the desire isn't there. And if we tell Krishna, well, the desire's not there, then Krishna says, okay. So we have the story of Draupadi. She's calling for Krishna. And Krishna, I think he was, where was he? Dwarka at that time? Who knows? He was in Dwarka. So his wife was Satyabhama. Was it Satyabhama? She's saying, Draupadi's calling. She needs you. And Krishna's saying, yeah, but I can't get there fast enough. It's an emergency. He said, no, but she's calling. You have to go. Well, horses will be too slow. Chariots are too slow. If I fly, it's too slow. But Draupadi's calling and calling and calling, and finally she gets desperate and she cries tears, and immediately Krishna leaves. And he shows up in the next moment. And Draupadi said, I was calling you three times. Why didn't you come when I called? And he said, well, I didn't really know if you wanted me to come, because you didn't seem that intense. He said, but the third time, then you were crying, and then I knew you wanted me, so I came on the chariot of your tears, and I showed up. So we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna, please engage me. Do we mean that? Krishna, please accept me. Krishna, please uplift me. Krishna, please purify me. Do we really mean that? When we're chanting? Or do we mean Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare? Oh no, I still have 8 rounds left. Is that what we mean? Oh no, I'd rather be doing something else. Is that what we mean? Whatever we mean, we communicate to Krishna, and he reciprocates with whatever we mean. Yes.
Prabhu Hare Krishna. I have a humble question. I am speaking for myself. Okay. It may not be applicable to others.
Okay.
Sometimes when I do seva for Krishna, some devotees chant Hare Krishna mantra very loudly. With the result, even though it is chanting of holy name, I feel distracted. Is it natural or something is wrong with me?
You feel distracted from your service? You're distracted from your service?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One time, Prabhupada, I think he must have been translating, and someone was chanting their rounds outside his room very loudly, and he got his servant and said, tell him to go chant somewhere else. This is disturbing. So, we appreciate the holy name, but we also have our service. So, sometimes we need to focus and concentrate. So, now I'll tell you a funny story. Should I tell you a funny story? So, naturally when you're speaking about japa and you're doing workshops, you talk about inattention, distraction. And there are many things to distract us. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said inattention is the cause of all the other offenses. And as we all have experienced, the mind tends to wander. So this is one of the things we need to deal with, to go more into the heart and more out of our mind so we can be fully present with the holy name. Now, sometimes we're so busy and so many things are going on and the mind is so disturbed, it's difficult to chant. We've all experienced that. So one time Tamal Krishna Maharaj was here in the early days when the temple was being built and they're having all the problems. And he went to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, I'm so disturbed I can't even chant my rounds. And Prabhupada said, me too. The whole situation was so disturbing, nobody could chant their rounds. So sometimes these things happen even to the pure devotees. So, not that Prabhupada was disturbed, but at the same time, he was trying to concentrate on his service. So he asked the devotee, go chant somewhere else. Another story, just to show that even Prabhupada had to deal with these things. Another story, some devotee told Prabhupada, he said, oh Prabhupada, it's so hard to control my tongue. He was complaining. And Prabhupada said, yes, I know, I also have a tongue. Did that answer your question, or you have another question?
Prabhu, I am not very much satisfied. Sorry to say that.
Oh, you want the answer that you should be more tolerant. Is that the answer
See,
you
the
want?
The question which I asked now, is it proper on our part to request the devotee to chant slowly, or it is embarrassing for us
is
to
it,
say
Is
like
it
that?
Proper on our part to request the devotee to chant somewhere else, or to chant quietly? Is that what you're asking? To ask him to chant somewhere else?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh. It depends how much he weighs and how much he likes to fight.
We always like to surrender, Prabhu, not fighting.
Depends on your relationship with that devotee, and how much he will respect you and honor you. So if you feel that he'll respect and honor you, you can nicely ask him and say, Prabhu, I'm really having a hard time concentrating. I appreciate your chanting, but is it possible you could chant somewhere else? It's just the way I am. I have difficulty concentrating. And if you have a nice relationship, he'll say, oh, of course, I'm sorry. But perhaps he's a senior to you and he may not appreciate your suggestion. So you have to consider these things. Should we stop? It's getting late. Mataji has a question. Yes?
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I just want to ask a question. A Mahamantra which we chant here is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. But if anybody speaks like the other way round, like Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Is it anything wrong with it?
Well, we're following in the line of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya gave it this way. No, there's nothing wrong, because at a certain point it's a circular mantra. So you'll forget where you started and where you ended up. So it amounts to the same thing. In some shastra, it's given Hare Rama first. But in our line, as given to us by Prabhupada and that chain of gurus, it's chanted Hare Krishna.
And
most, you see, the Maha Mantra is different than other mantras. It's not an invocation. It's not Om. We're not offering an invocation, an obeisance, but we're offering a prayer. It's a prayer. And it's like a rasa mandala, because the prayer continues, so you don't know where it starts and stops. It continues in a circle.
And so a small question, one more question. Like, suppose anybody is not putting tilak or not putting that tulsi mala. So if that person wants to sing a bhajan or devotional song here, is it wrong, like...
Oh, you mean here in the temple?
Yeah, here in the temple.
Is it wrong? Well, I will tell you something that most devotees don't know in ISKCON. But one time our spiritual master said something very heavy. And he said, only devotees who are initiated should sing in the temple. But we don't follow that, but he once said that. So I think what Prabhupada meant was that he wanted to make sure that, see, anything done in the temple in terms of not only on the altar, but in terms of bhajan or kirtan, is also a form of worship of the murti. And so, because that's all going to the murti. And so generally, the idea is, not generally, the idea is to worship the murti, only the Brahmins, the twice-born, Diksha, they can go on the altar. So Prabhupada also saw that the kirtan, like the it was like the puja. And so he just wanted to make sure that whoever sings for Krishna is a bhakta who is following the principles of bhakti. Because that's how we worship Krishna. Not only with our singing, but with our whole life. And so then our whole life will come out in our singing. But if someone is, you know, going to the bar, going to the disco, then coming to the temple to sing, it's not proper. So he wanted to make sure. Now, in this temple, in most temples in our movement, they don't have the stricture that only initiated devotees can sing. But still, they want to make sure those who are singing are following the principles and practices, because it's a form of worship of Krishna, of the deity. So
Thank you.
If you like to sing, then you follow the practices, principles. Krishna someday will say, I want you to sing. Hare Krishna. So, we can end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.